Good evening and welcome to the Midnight Owl. I'm your host of the mundane and somewhat interesting, Tim. The Midnight Owl is a proud member of the Not After 30 podcast network. This week we go where no man has known before. Garden gnomes.
This is where all our work is done.
So what are you gonna do with all these underpants that you steal?
Collecting underpants is just phase one. Phase one, collect underpants.
So what's phase two?
Hey, what's phase two? Phase one, we collect underpants. Yeah, but what about phase two? Well, phase three is profit. Get it?
I don't get it.
You see, phase one, collect underpants. Phase two? Phase three, profit.
Oh, I get it.
Search for underpants, hey. We won't stop until we have underpants. Yum, tum, yummy, tum, hey. Time to go to work, work all night. Search for underpants, hey. We won't stop until we have underpants. Yum, tum, yummy, tum, hey.
Oh, shit, he's awake.
What?
This kid is awake. What the fuck do we do?
Oh, fuck. I guess we gotta kill him.
Alright, fuck it, let's kill him.
There's a story written by the Brothers Grimm from the year 1812 or so, and it goes something like this. The Gnome. The king loves trees, but there is a tree that he holds more precious than all, an apple tree. He declares whoever eats an apple from this tree, he will wish them 100 fathoms underground. This even includes his daughters. Very little is forbidden from his daughters, and they're curious to know what would really happen. The youngest says that their father loves them too much to wish them underground. So they go out into the garden, they find the tree, and each take a bite of an apple. As the last daughter takes her bite, all three sisters sink underground. The king calls his daughters to dinner, but they do not come. The king's daughters have disappeared. He becomes so worried about his daughters that he offers their hand to whoever will save them. Many of the kingdom's men set out to find the daughters, including three huntsmen. The huntsmen, three brothers, find a castle with no one in it. But there's food set out. The brothers watch, and for hours, the food stays warm, never cools, still seeing steam rise from some of the plates. No one comes to eat it. Eventually, they break down because they're so hungry and decide that they have to eat, thinking that since an abandoned kingdom would be a good place to house their new princesses, they agree to draw lots. One will stay behind, make camp, and protect the castle, while the other two search. The eldest brother stays the first day. Midday, he is confronted by a small gnome who begs for bread. The eldest reluctantly gives him a piece, but the gnome drops it. At first, the eldest is confused about why the gnome drops the bread. When the gnome refuses to pick it up, the eldest bends down, reaches for the bread, and the gnome suddenly takes out a stick and beats him unconscious. The same thing happens to the second brother the next day. The third day, the youngest brother is told to stay behind. The other brothers hated their little brother, calling him Stupid Hans, and decided not to tell him about their terrible luck. During lunch that day, when the gnome approaches the youngest brother and drops his bread, Hans tells him that if he is too lazy to pick up the bread, he does not deserve it. When the gnome grows angry, Hans takes out a stick and beats the shit out of the gnome, all the way until he is forced to apologize, promising him to show him how to rescue the king's daughters if he doesn't kill him. The gnome shows Hans a deep well without water. Before the gnome departs, he tells Hans that his companions will betray him, so he should go alone, and then vanishes. When the brothers get back, Hans tells the other two that they must go to the well, and of all the things the gnome had said, other than the fact that they would betray him. The eldest and middle brother try to be lowered, but after a few feet down, panic and ring a bell so that they'll be brought back up. Again, it is up to the youngest brother to accomplish their task. Hans goes down and finds the king's daughters being held captive, one by a dragon with 9 heads, one by a dragon with 5 heads, and one by a dragon with 4 heads. Hans slays the dragons and has the king's daughters lifted in the basket one by one. When all of the sisters are up there, he remembered what the gnome said about his brothers betraying him. So Hans gathers up a large rock, puts it in the basket, rings the bell for it to be raised. As his basket is halfway up, his brothers cut the rope. Hearing the crash, they believe their brother dead, and they take their princesses back to the king. The brothers threaten the princesses that they must never tell the king what had happened this day, and that the older brothers were the ones that saved them. Having no way out, Hans explores the rooms and finds a flute. He discovers playing it conjures up elves, who bring him to the surface by dragging him up by the hair through the well. When he arrives to the kingdom on the day of the princess's weddings, he's immediately arrested and thrown into the dungeon. The king can tell the princesses are upset by this and asks them to tell them what happened. They tell their father that they cannot tell him, so he tells them to tell the stove while he listens in through the door. Enraged, the king sentences the older brothers to death by hanging. Having proven honest and good to the king's family, Hans is allowed to marry the youngest princess. So, folks, that's where gnomes come from, how they were seen. Time has tamed the view of the mannequin folk. Today, they're small in stature, often dressed in bright-colored shirts of blue, yellow, and green, paired with contrasting colored leggings, and a wide belt to delineate the color clash. A look topped off with a standard-issue red dunce cap. I'm describing, of course, garden gnomes. Some people proudly adorn their yards with gnomes, stationed like garden watchmen. Think of it like someone that wants the protection of a gargoyle, but can't stomach the terrible visage. It's Disney-fied. Others fear the gnomes, and justifiably according to their collective reputation as being territorial, mischievous, and even malicious. Small gnome statues began appearing in Europe in the early 1600s, but the garden gnome or lawn gnomes as we recognize them today began to appear in Germany in the mid to late 1800s. Initially, gnomes were said to be underground miners with an affinity for the earth, having emerged from their tunnels to live in the woodlands and gardens. Some myths suggest that gnomes come alive at night to work in the garden and protect the gardens from evil sorcery. In other tales of the nature of gnomes, they are evil and in the garden at night. Some of the earliest writings about gnomes describe them as elusive beings, very reluctant to interact with humans with a reputation for being shy, which accounts for the creepy practice of peeking out from behind plants or other obstructions in an effort to remain unseen. It is said that not all gnomes are verbal, but those that do speak are said to be very clever at spinning riddles. Due to their origin story as miners, some versions of gnome mythology claim them to be guardians of gold treasures. While the myths began in Germany, their international fame occurred in 1847, when a British man, Sir Charles Isham, returned to the UK from a vacation in Germany, bringing with him a set of 21 gnomes. Their arrival is said to have sparked the great garden gnome craze that trended throughout Europe and then over to America. Sir Charles Isham placed all 21 gnomes in gardens throughout his estate of Lamport Hall in Northamptonshire. Isham's daughters hated the gnomes. I couldn't find out what happened, but a war was waged between daughter and father. The daughters won many battles in which 20 of the gnomes were destroyed. However, the war was lost. Lampy was missed in the massacre. Lampy remains at Lamport Hall to this day, but he is no longer a garden dweller. Kinda weird. Father brings gnomes, gnomes get super popular. You know, a king and his three daughters. Kinda sounds familiar. Lampy today is kept securely on display for visitors to admire, now serving as a tourist attraction. Lampy was insured for £1 million in 1997, and today it is estimated his worth is around £2 million. Lampy is often referred to as the original garden gnome, OGG if it were. We know that it's not the literal truth, he is just the archetype for the modern garden gnome. What most people picture of a garden gnome, and rightfully so, as he is credited with popularizing gnomes as garden decor internationally. A testament to garden gnome popularity having reached North America with the enthusiasm to match Europe's, the annual Inman Park Festival in Atlanta, Georgia includes a parade of people dressed as garden gnomes. For 7 years, the goal was to take the Guinness World Record title of largest gathering of people dressed as garden gnomes, which was held by a group of 478 marching in the UK set in 2011. In 2018, the Atlanta group took the title away with a gathering of 755 participants. If I'd only known how seriously people take all of this. America also holds the world record for the largest garden gnome, coming in at 13 feet and 6 inches. Its name is Noam Chomsky. It is iconic and terrifying, and it has this death-eyed stare coming down at you from 13 feet. It's... melt your fucking soul, man. I've cared for and fought for many stupid things in my life. But I don't think I've ever stooped so low as to genuinely care about gathering the most garden gnomes in a parade. Right now, the debates I've had with people over about the validity of pineapple on pizza feels kind of justifiable. While some celebrate a respect and adoration for gnomes, others cringe at their sight. Some for the fright and distrust of their mythic past, and others for aesthetic disgust. Gnomophobia, the fear of garden gnomes, related to pediophobia, a fear of dolls. Garden gnomes have been banned from several gardening competitions, considered inelegant and childish. The backlash actually has been huge, with gnome supporters accusing gardeners of being snobbish and classist. If I picture anybody in a gardening competition, yeah, snobbish and classist comes to mind. There's no roadrunners with the wind legs spinning around. Like, come on, what's the even point? Shadow cowboy leaning up against the wall? That is what a garden is, folks. So maybe you're thinking to yourself, you're ready to start your own colony. Get a couple of gnomes, you know, have a lot of fun, bring this kind of evil into your area, but be careful. Gnome napping is a thing. The practice of stealing garden gnomes as a prank can also be referred to as gnoming. On the silly side of this activity, gnome napping might be committed by friends of the homeowners who then travel with the gnome, taking pictures of it in various locations before returning it with a photo album of its vacation photos. Gnoming is not always so innocent. The traveling gnome prank isn't always a joke between friends or neighbors, though it can be a strange joke to play against a stranger. Stealing their gnome and taking its pictures in front of famous places, then sending the photos to the previous owner, addressed to the home from which the gnome was stolen, I would consider funny. The act of abducting gnomes isn't always fun and games. You can be charged if caught with trespassing and theft. Even more escalated than that, organized gnome liberation groups have sprung up around the world, claiming to liberate gnomes from their captive state of enslaved servitude. never to be returned. Instead, released to the natural habitats of forests and parks. I can admit this because the statute of limitations has to be up. I've been a part of such movements. Actually, most of my time in high school was spent with a radical ideological group of individuals who were referred to as the GLF, the Gnome Liberation Front. Our mission was to take gnomes from bad homes. Mostly, we got drunk and drove around. The passengers were drunk, the driver was sober, we were kids, we weren't idiots. And stole garden gnomes. Well, we were idiots because we were driving around drunk stealing garden gnomes, but we were safe idiots because there was a DD there. Does that make sense? We also got high a lot, which I can say now because it's legal, but not for kids. Hey, kids, don't smoke weed or drink or go around stealing garden gnomes. This is a cautionary tale. We would get drunk, have someone drive us around and steal garden gnomes. We had our leader, Todd Gnomington, the first gnome ever liberated, which I think is still actually kicking around amongst the group of redeemed individuals that I would have went on these missions with. There was a great many missions in our history. Spotters would go out and scope out and write down locations during the day, and at night, we would collect. One of the most epic scenes I remember from high school was at a party, a group of people, again, those redeemed individuals, showing up with a 3-foot-tall concrete gnome that took 4 people to lift, being brought into a party to be displayed with pride on the night of its liberation. It was all fun and games until the house we were storing the gnomes at had the underground bunker discovered, to the confusion and utter disappointment of the homeowners. It was discussed that the gnomes had to go, but the homeowners didn't want to know what happened. All it takes for evil to triumph is for good people to do gnome thing. Coincidentally, we knew where one of our teachers lived. Knowing this teacher as a kind and responsible adult, and we were growing tired of stealing for sale signs from around town and putting them up on his lawn, we ran the biggest mission of our young lives, unloading 30, or it was probably more than 30, gnomes on his lawn in a semicircle facing the door. It was glorious. It was stupid. It might not have actually been his house, which, by the transitive properties there, mean we spent years torturing a homeowner who was innocent and endured our shenanigans wondering who the fuck was doing this dumb shit. Kind of brings it back to being funny again to me, but I'm a bad person. Listeners, believe it or not, there is a worldwide gnome liberation movement made up of several organizations, mostly flagshipped in Europe, but supported internationally. So not only were we dorky and annoying, we were unoriginal. Unless Todd Gnomington and his defunct Facebook page was somehow the inspiration, then we were super original and we've caused an international movement. That's something I could hang my hat on, right? That's my legacy. The GLF. The largest of these legitimate legal organizations advocating for the rights and freedoms of gnomes is located in France, titled Mouvement d'Emancipation des Gnomes de Jardin. Apologize for my French. Translating to the Emancipation Movement for Garden Gnomes. They work to free garden gnomes from forced garden labor by sending them back into the wild or by sending them on trips around the world. And in Italy, Free the Gnomes is the non-violent legal branch of Italy's infamous MALAG. M-A-L-A-G. Italy's national organization dedicated to the international efforts of the Garden Gnome Liberation Front. All arguing that gnomes have an inalienable right to freedom, just as humans do. And that it is very ethically wrong to force gnomes to stand in gardens without pay and without their stated consent. Regardless of whether the gnomes are put there merely to serve as ornamentation or for some other allegedly more meaningful purpose. Just Say Gnome.net suggests these groups are loosely modeled around animal rights movements such as the Animal Liberation Front. In Oregon, there is a grassroots group which takes a somewhat more peaceful, communicative approach. Instead of just abducting gnomes to deliver them to their freedom, this group first leaves gnome owners a letter explaining their accusations of abuse against the gnomes and offering the owner a chance to hand their statutory friend over peacefully. While I applaud their commitment to the cause and their intentions to navigate negotiations in a peaceful manner, I'd be curious to hear how often owners arrange to hand over their lawn ornaments in response to a handwritten plea to willingly give away their yard ornaments to a group of people demanding they do so. Can you imagine that exchange when you have friends over for dinner about how you had to hand your gnome owner your gnomes over? You know, there's some annoying people in the world, and I'm sure they think they're funny, but I can just imagine the stationery and smirk on their face as this person writes out accusations of gnomish abuse trying to be funny. Would I smile if I saw this? Would I be annoyed? Just Say Gnome.net writes that the American federal government has yet to label gnome liberators as terrorists, although it seems to consider animal liberation groups to be among the most dangerous of domestic activist organizations, aggressively handing out lifetime sentences and $1 million fines to minor offenders. Can you imagine doing jail time as a prosecuted member of a gnome liberation movement? Out in the fucking jail yard, everyone's getting their, like, prison tats and playing basketball and lifting weights. Some big son of a bitch walks up to you, like, "What are you in for, man?" There's a European gnome sanctuary located in Barga, Italy, which assures gnomes of a safe place to call home. Some of the gnomes choose to reside in the wooded valley outside the city, far away from all the problems and pollution of modern life, and have started to rebuild their lives with their newfound freedom. While those willing to trust humans again are welcome to settle inside the city. Combined with the local council, local press, and a willing police force, the citizens of Barga have all vowed to protect the gnome way of life. I've woken up in some uncomfortable and terrible places. I can't imagine after drinking way too much or doing the other things that I should not do, waking up in a park surrounded by fucking gnomes staring at you. That would probably be enough to teach me to not do that as often. I don't know. That would be the worst hangover of your life.
What are you doing in our forest, boy?
The gnome archetype has become a staple in modern fantasy, appearing in Oz as underground businessmen, or in Narnia as underground slaves. Even in J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter books, they're a common garden pest. We definitely can't forget South Park. Their brilliant imagining of the underpants gnomes who cause chaos in South Park with their underpants profit plan. But the way I think gnomes will always be remembered and live most vibrantly today in their portrayals is in role-playing games like Pathfinder or Dungeons & Dragons. I guess they're not cool enough for video games or boring-ass Hobbit movies, but nonetheless, they will live around the table. May you only roll 20s, my gnomish friends. I just had some thoughts I wanted to share with you as we do a callback to the story at the start of this, the Brothers Grimm. The king knew full well his goddamn apple tree was a ticking time bomb, right? I imagine he had probably made some kind of deal with the Fae originally to get his kingdom.
We will make you king! We will make you kings of these lands! But you must never eat of the tree, or some shit.
Look, it's an old story from a different time, and I'm just saying this asshole had a loaded gun in his backyard and didn't have the common sense to build a fucking fence. Also, why was their hand in marriage the first thing the king offered? Not like some fucking gold or something? The king is probably less worried about them being stolen away, as that they may have run away in a fit of passion to find some kind of narrative agency. I can tell you 100%, I'd be less trusting of food that stays steaming hot hours after walking into a room than walking into a room and just seeing food there. It's an inverse correlation, if I can misuse the statistics jargon. And like, what was even the point of the story? The whole moral of the story? You know, don't trust poor people or your family. Or maybe you can only ever trust people if they're beaten into telling you the truth. And the dragons having 9, 5, and 3 heads, I think it was? What did that play into the story at all? And all of that aside, the phrase stupid Hans has brought me no end of delight on this episode. I want to start a ska band and name it Stupid Hans. Our first single will be a parody of Keith Urban's Stupid Boy. Look for that nowhere, because I have no follow-through or desire to chase this random thought. But thank you for listening. And don't forget to take a moment. An owl at the moon.
Hoot hoot.
Well, he was precious like a flower. He grew wild, wild but innocent. A perfect prayer in a desperate hour. He was everything, beautiful and different. Stupid Hans, you can't fence in that fucked up apple tree. Stupid Hans, it's like holding back the wind.